Oak session number 12033, reel 1.
And Gordon Wilson, reel 1. So if I could ask you first of all then, Reverend Wilson, about your life before the war. You know, if you could tell me something about your family and the lifestyle.
My family, my father was a bank accountant with what was then the National Provincial Bank. And we were a suburban family, and my school was King Edward VII School in Sheffield. And I had no thoughts at all of pacifism in early days of the 1930s. But I was confirmed at the age of 15 in 1934, which made a great impression upon me. And the Christian faith began to start meaning things for me, and I was thinking quite deeply, so much so that I met a friend in the fellowship of the church who was wearing a badge which said, "War, we say no," which had originated with Dick Shepherd, Canon Dick Shepherd of St. Martin's in the Fields. And I said to this person, "Well, that's what I think, you see." But my thoughts hadn't progressed much further than that. And "War, we say no" was the badge then of what became the Peace Pledge Union. It started with Dick Shepherd in a broadcast from St. Martin's, calling upon all people who wanted to renounce war and never support or sanction another to send him a postcard. And such was a huge weight of postcards that came that it was almost overwhelming. And out of that they formed the Shepherd Pledge, which became the Peace Pledge Union. This was about the time, 1936, two years after I'd been confirmed, when I saw this badge and was interested. And so I wanted to know more. And eventually I started reading all kinds of books by people like Aldous Huxley and who was it who wrote... there was a lot of popular writing in those days against the war. Names have just slipped out of my mind for the moment, but when we are young, you know, he was a very popular writer, and he wrote a book which impressed me a lot in those days. And I was reading both books and pamphlets, which was stirring up a kind of anti-war atmosphere. And this struck me because during my younger days, I was born just a week or two after the end of the 1914 war. In 1918, December 1918, I was born. And as I grew up, things like the annual Remembrance Day or Armistice Day, as it was then called, services at school had made a very deep impression. And the 2 minutes silence, which in those days was universal, everything stopped, the trams stopped, the traffic stopped, and there was complete silence, brought home all the suffering and the folly of war, the intense slaughter that had taken place, and most families have been affected by this. And growing up in that kind of atmosphere, it made a great impression upon me, and that was perhaps why I had noticed "War, we say no" and wanted to do something about it. And then they said, "Well, you should join the Peace Pledge Union," but I was reluctant. I remember now that it took me, I think, something like 3 months to come to the point where, in September 1936, I felt ready to sign the card that Dick Shepherd had instituted and post. I can remember the pillar box now, and posting it, and joining the PPU. It was a very big step. Even then, in 1936, I felt that it was a tremendous change of outlook, which demanded a great deal of thought. I had no thought then of conscientious objection, because there wasn't a war, nor was there conscription. So I eventually did join, But then I must say that having taken their weekly newspaper, Peace News, and having also in my enthusiasm, as a 17-year-old, gone round to people's houses and tried to persuade them to join this pledge and to proselytise for them, and going to meetings, I began to feel that this Peace News, although I'd sold it in the streets of Sheffield as an enthusiastic member, I began to get the feeling that it was a little bit too much on the intellectual side. And I was much more interested in the Christian response. And then I heard about the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which is almost the most pure of all pacifist societies, which was formed during the 1914 war by, I believe, an Englishman and a German meeting on a railway platform somewhere in Europe. And out of that, there had come this commitment to renounce war. Germans and English feeling a sense of unity in this. And that attracted me a very great deal. So I started going to meetings of the local group in Sheffield, which met in the Victoria Hall, which was the Methodist central place, on a Friday evening. And they had meditations there, which were intensely meaningful to me. And I felt quite at home in this Christian fellowship. And so I joined this, I think this was about 1937, having been in the PPU for less than a year, I suppose. And then, during the course of time, I heard about a group called the Anglican Pacifist Fellowship. And being an Anglican, I thought, well, I should be interested in this. But there was only a very tiny number of them in Sheffield, and a few of them. It seemed rather a pathetic few, rather esoteric sort of attitude to me. And I wasn't very strongly drawn towards that particular group, although I felt that I should be identified with it. In point of fact, the Anglican Pacifist Fellowship had not been formed until June 1937. The Golden Jubilee of that group was celebrated in 1987, 50 years since it was formed. And so I felt that I should join that society as an Anglican, although, as I say, I wasn't personally terribly strongly drawn. The Fellowship of Reconciliation meant more to me in those days. Well, now we're getting towards 1938, and all the intense emotional atmosphere of the imminence of war. And one began to realise that this was going to become a very personal thing and not just an idea in one's mind. So throughout 1938, one got more and more drawn into the arguments and discussions about what Hitler was doing in Germany and concentration camps. We were fully aware of those even in those days. And the need to do something about this, which in a very simple terms means fighting against it. But I felt that what I now understood about the Christian gospel, which had been the seeds of which had been born in 1934 when I was confirmed, and which had been nurtured through my fellowship with the church and encountering this man with War We Say No badge, which had drawn me more and more into discussions. I remember, as we used to talk after meetings, standing outside the church, our parish church in Sheffield, and a man coming up to two or three of us who were standing there and saying, "Wasn't like that when I was your age. We would never have stood and talked like that." You said, you're very different. And we were rather intense, I suppose, talking away till 11:30 or midnight and then going home. And this was quite a regular thing. And we drew into a kind of close friendship in that kind of atmosphere. I remember in particular a great friend of mine, I can't just recall whether we'd been confirmed together. I've been trying to think because only a week or two ago I had a letter from his wife to say that he'd died, which was quite a sad thing to learn. Well, he was a Boy Scout and was going to go on what in those days was called a first-class hike, which meant going with the Assistant Scoutmaster and camping for a weekend. And he, as his my friend, he invited me to go with him. I'm not really the camping type, but I said I would go with them just for the sake of friendship. And we went on this weekend camp with a little tent and camped in a field in a village not very far from Sheffield. And I can remember about when we pitched the tent, the assistant scoutmaster was lying in a sleeping bag on the far side of the tent. I was at the other side, and my friend who'd invited me to join them was in the middle. He promptly went to sleep and was snoring through the night, whereas the other chap and I started talking about some of these things that I'm discussing with you now. And we talked and talked and talked right through the night until the dawn next morning. Then we realised we wanted to go to church at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, and we walked up quite a steep hill to the village church, only to find no signs of life there. And then we saw the vicar having a shave in the bathroom window, and he said there wasn't a service that morning. We were very disappointed and walked all the way back again. Well, this chap I'd been talking to had been a member of the church, which was my home parish church, which was called Ecclesall, in the west end of Sheffield, the rather more affluent suburban area of Sheffield. And the curate of that church had been a Methodist minister called the Reverend Samuel Price. And he had always been an Anglican and had come back to the Anglican church and had been ordained as an Anglican priest. So he was rather older than the normal type of curate. And his preaching was influenced by his Methodist background. Of course, it was always very much more of the popular style. But he had just been appointed to become vicar of a church in the really industrial area of Sheffield called the Wicker, near to the River Don, a church that had been condemned as being derelict and with no congregation. And it was a challenge to him. He was made vicar of this church. And he had inspired people like this friend who had been talking to me all through the night, who was a keen Boy Scout, assistant scoutmaster, and one or two others to go and help him in this task at Holy Trinity Wicker in Sheffield. And so as a result of our camp weekend, I decided to go to this church with my friend and started going there with him and became very much involved in the life of the church. We were quite excited to be doing this task of saving a church from being closed as redundant. And in fact, it became a very popular church. The crowds were attracted to it through the preaching of this man, Samuel Price, so much so that one of the popular newspapers, the Daily Express or something like that, started a series which they called Churches with a Pull. And number one was Holy Trinity Wicker, Sheffield. And they talked about the preaching of this man and also the large congregations which were attracted, and we were part of all this. So again, it was extremely exciting. By this time, it was 1939. We'd started going in the end of 1936 and through 37, 38, and 1939. We were still part of this. To go to church, in fact, meant getting up early and catching the first tram from Ecclesall, where we lived, through the middle of Sheffield and out again into the other side where the steelworks were, and getting there. Perhaps, I think the service was probably about 9 or 9:30, and spending the whole day there, having tea at the vicarage and staying there until after the evensong and going home on a late tram in the Sunday evening. That was my life in those days. It was quite the centre of life. And about this time, a bit earlier than this, again during 1936, it was when there was a lot of unemployment. It was very hard to get jobs. And my father, being in the bank, had always wanted me to follow in his footsteps. And the National Provincial Bank were not too keen on sons following fathers, and they had a height limit, which was 5'4", and I was just about half an inch underneath this, and they wouldn't have me, you see. So I answered an advertisement in the local paper in Sheffield for the Norwich Union Insurance Company wanting a junior clerk, and they set a little examination, one or two literary questions about authorship of books and some mathematical questions and some questions raising moral issues like the relation between insurance and gambling and so on, just as a kind of test. Well, I did this, and then they offered me the job, which wasn't wonderfully paid. In those days it came to about £1 a week, £50 a year, in fact, not quite £1 a week. And I got the job, and I enjoyed it very much. I was involved in a bit of the office work, and also I was sent out to go and talk to people, clients and so on, and I was meeting people out in the world and then coming back into the office, so that I was involved in life outside. And banking seemed to me so confined that I was less and less attracted to it. So that by the time we got to 1937, I had been for an interview with the district staff superintendent of the Midland Bank in Loughborough. And the result of that interview, they eventually offered me a job at a place called Belper in Derbyshire. And by this time, I was so settled with the Norwich Union, and although the bank was a better job, I said that I would rather stay where I was, turn the job down. And then, in conjunction with this fellowship in Holy Trinity Wicker and this man, Samuel Price, more and more people began to start thinking of being ordained, which is something that had been so remote from me that it took some time to even come to terms with it. However, in the context of that fellowship, I was drawn into it as well. And I said I would like to think of being ordained. And in those days, the first step towards that was to go and see the Director of Ordinations of Sheffield Diocese, whose only question to me was not about my vocation. It was, have you any money? Because we're a poor diocese and we can't give you a grant. And there were no state grants in those days, so that to be able to get a college education meant having somebody in the family who would be prepared to help you with it. Well, my mother was so prepared, and in fact, I did pursue this idea of applying for acceptance as ordination. And I was in the process of negotiation about going to college and so on when everything boiled up. 1939, conscription was brought in, and I was exactly in the first batch of people at the age by then of 20. In 1938, I was 20 in December 1938. Well, by June 1939, I was 20, and I registered as a conscientious objector in the context of all the thinking that we'd been engaged in and the belonging to this society. By then, I was so convinced that my way would have to be a pacifist way that there wasn't any question about. I didn't have much heart searching about registering as a conscientious objector. It just seemed to be the absolutely right thing to do. And I did it with youthful gusto. Looking back, I suppose I was rather brash.
Did you have any idea, if I could just interrupt you for a moment, what COs experienced in World War One? You know, I wonder what your sort of expectations were of, you know, registering as a conscientious objector. Did you know how they had suffered in World War One?
Well, I had by then begun to learn about this, yes. You mean the conscientious objectors, yes. I'd heard from personal accounts of what had happened to people. And to be quite honest, again, it seems rather sort of naive, but in September 1939, I had convinced myself that conscientious objectors would be shot. That was out of the knowledge of the experience of the 1914 war and the total lack of sympathy. And I sort of, in my mind, thought about this, and I thought at least I would go to prison without any argument, but was prepared to face this, not very happily, but I knew that that whatever the consequences were, I would have to take them. Well, in point of fact, Winston Churchill, of all people, was one who argued that the experience of 1914 to 18 should not be repeated, and that there should be an official place for conscientious objection, which is why I had been able to register as a conscientious objector in June 1939, I should say. So that I had actually registered for that before the war broke out. Then the war came, and I thought all this would be changed, but it wasn't. Churchill maintained the position that he'd taken, and all honour to him for that. Well, in due course, one was called before a tribunal, and our tribunal was in Leeds. It was fixed for, I think it was All Saints' Day, 1st of November, 1939. And this vicar friend of mine drove me to Leeds for this tribunal, and we went into the county court, I suppose it's the county courtroom where it was held. And I was feeling, in a sense, elated and buoyed up. I wanted to witness to my Christian faith. I wasn't really concerned about asking them please to let me off, but to tell them what I believed about what was right for a Christian to do. And in a sense, I felt elated about this. And when I saw the group of people, other conscientious objectors waiting, somewhat nervously, I felt a little bit superior. I felt this, you know, they all looked as if they're desperately worried about what was going to happen. I wasn't at all worried, I'm afraid. Not really, but then eventually one was called into the courtroom, and we had been told to send a statement of our views. Now, I believed that the statement of views, which was to be written down, was not something that would be appropriately sent in beforehand for a tribunal to study in a text and either to criticise or otherwise, but that they were there to judge me on the day as a person, so whether I had a genuine conscientious objection to war or not. And so in the by then this job that I had, which was at the Norwich Union, in the office typewriter, I typed out a simple statement of my beliefs about why I was wanting to register as a conscientious objector. The statement that I typed out on the office typewriter was really quite short and simple. And looking at it now, it seems almost a little naive. I said, "I believe in God as the Father of mankind. I believe in the absolute sanctity of human life. I try to base my whole life on the two commandments of Jesus Christ. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, with all thy mind and with all thy strength, and thy neighbour as thyself. My whole desire is to serve my fellow men to the utmost of my capacity, and I have found that the only way to serve them in the true sense is to serve them through God in accordance with his will. I know that God exists and that he is the bond of love between men, and I have absolute faith in him. For these reasons, I find that war is a direct denial of God, and I cannot in any way assist willingly in the successful prosecution of a war against another nation of men. War is evil, which destroys the moral progress of mankind, and never by employing the method of war will a nation wipe out the possibility or even probability of future strife. I believe with all my heart that there is another way apart from the one which our government has chosen. I believe this other way is God's way, and that it is the only way which can ever bring true peace on earth. As then the state has, in my opinion, chosen a way other than God's, I claim the right to appeal to an authority higher than the state, and it is this authority which drives me to oppose not only military service, which has the purpose of destroying my fellow men, but also the conscripting of men's lives for a purpose which I believe is at variance with the will of the Creator of those lives. My duty, therefore, as I see it, is to serve my fellow men to the best of my ability, to which end I am prepared to make any sacrifice, but to serve them through God and for God, showing love for hate, forgiveness for bitterness, which leaves me convinced that my service must be apart altogether from the direction of the state in this matter. I therefore claim unconditional exemption. I had typed that out just a day or two before the tribunal in 1939, while the war was still in progress. And I took it with, six copies with me to the tribunal. And when I arrived in the courtroom, I simply handed them over to the tribunal and asked that they might read that before we began the proceedings, which they did somewhat irritably, because I had gone against what the instructions were by not sending a statement in beforehand. And they did read it. And
who were they? Can you remember the panel of people there?
I'm afraid that the names...
But were there many of them?
There were, I think, five or six, yes. And they were probably magistrates and local worthies, but I have no remembrance at all of the makeup of the panel. I remember there was one small man who was extremely sort of tenacious in his questionings. And I felt that the proceedings were a little bit irrelevant in a way. They were asking things which didn't seem to me to be very much related to what we were doing. I suppose in a way it was relevant to say, as they did you have any fights when you were at school? And I said, well, I did. I was always involved in fights, I have to say. And they said, well, that wasn't very long ago, was it? I was 20 at the time of the tribunal. And I said, rather pertly, I suppose, not in years, but it is in ideas. And so hum was what they said to that, or humph or something. And then they asked about being part of the ambulance services.